Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Wednesday, September 29th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever been introduced to. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. Go to that website, click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that 24th chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Worksheet, or vice versa. It's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet itself. It's just a simple PDF file. No strings attached, no reason to sign up for a newsletter or put in any credit card information. It's absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you tap on that, it'll let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the worksheet process and or given powerful testimonials about how the use of that process has improved the quality of their lives. We encourage people to do that soon and often. It frequently results in them having comments or questions. If you are one of those people, give us a call. The number is 563-999-3581. When you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. You can also email us at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeanie at whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And we're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 272nd day of the year. So today's lesson reads, how can illusions satisfy the Creator's offspring? Creator, the truth belongs to me. My home is set in heaven by your will and mine. As such, dreams cannot content me. Illusions can't bring me happiness. Only your memory can satisfy your offspring. I will accept no less than all that you have given me. I'm surrounded by your love forever, still forever gentle and forever safe. Creator, Your offspring must be as you created them. Today, we bypass illusions. And if we hear temptation call to us to stay and linger in a dream, we turn aside and ask ourselves if we, the offspring of creation, could possibly be content with dreams, when the truth is heaven can be chosen just as easily as hell, and love will happily replace all fear. We're also doing the Course in Miracles experiment book by Pam Grout, and her lesson 272 is titled, No More Jerky Knees. She quotes Pete Holmes as saying, we hit delete on a lot of inconvenient miracles. Pam writes, most of us know our shoe size, our height, and our credit card numbers. But how many of us admit to our premature cognitive commitments? We all have them. These are beliefs about reality that cause our brains to edit out everything that doesn't fit our perceptions. Premature cognitive commitments are basically knee-jerk reactions that create a false sense of safety and security. What they really are is a prison trapping us in yesterday. Lesson 272 makes no bones about it. Illusions will never fully satisfy and will never deliver happiness. So today we pass illusions by and we let love happily replace all fear. So that's our Course in Miracles lesson and our Pam Grout commentary. And we have, as usual, about 50 minutes left to entertain your comments, questions, topic suggestions, testimonials. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What's on your mind? How can we support you today? I have been looking at the Richard Moss book of Inside Out Healing. And it's a book that he wrote after he wrote the Mandala of Being. And he's talking about how, you know, the focus, the inside out healing is going to happen when we learn to spend more time in the present moment. Our conscious thoughts, our awareness focused in the present moment. And actually, I misspoke there because it's not so much our conscious thoughts. What he says is when we are in present moment awareness, there aren't any thoughts about it. There's just the experience of it. And it's highly recommended that we learn some kind of thought process or ritual or exercise that we practice to bring ourselves into the habit of staying more in present moment awareness. And he's talking about, you know, any little thing you can do, whether it's a breathing exercise or a meditation exercise or a mantra, to help bring yourself into the moment and present moment awareness. I mentioned this in the last time I was talking about this, that he talks about this gap that exists. It's tiny, tiny, tiny. It's so quick that most of us miss it. But there's a gap that exists between our having a present moment awareness and thought arising. Way of Mastery talks about it. They talk about it in the Darshans for Way of Mastery and the Q&A. It's a spiritual awakening and awareness that's been around for thousands of years. What we do with our conscious thought is an overlay on top of the present moment experience. And if you can ground yourself, if you can practice and build the habit of being in that present moment awareness, and he calls it grounding yourself in the now, capital N-O-W, this opens up a space. This kind of increases slightly the gap, in a sense, between anything that happens, any stimulus outside of you, and your response. Or you're stepping into an experience in the moment and your thoughts about it. It's as though if you are grounding yourself in the now, if you're practicing this experience of breathing and being aware of every aspect of the experience without being overrun by thoughts, it's as though you have more time to choose your response to whatever may happen in your life. And when that happens, you're less apt to be defensive, aggressive, irritable, fearful, or habitually reactive. When you are grounding yourself in the now, you are less inclined to rush to judgment. You're less inclined to make blind assumptions and hasty, often emotionally charged decisions. When you are grounded in the now, reactivity is not determined by the strength of the stimulus. Rather, it's based on how far you are from your authentic self, how much you're able to be aware in the moment of your authentic self and the moment and your thoughts. In other words, the strength of your reactivity is determined, is directly proportional to how not in touch with the present moment you are. The more you're separating yourself from active awareness of the present moment, the more highly reactive you will be. So he suggests that taking the next step, he suggests that he wants to place before us over and over again an invitation. I mentioned this before, but it's gotten the highlight in the book for me, and I think it's really worth mentioning again. What's the invitation he's placing before us? There's an invitation to eliminate unnecessary suffering. Show of hands, who would like to eliminate unnecessary suffering? Oh, every hand in the audience goes up. Right? No one wants to suffer unnecessarily. And the invitation is accepted only when we choose to cultivate greater present moment awareness. So he says, as I've been illustrating in the previous pages in this book, this means spending more of your life in the now, capital N-O-W, and less time dwelling in stories about the past or the future or yourself or anything or anyone that you see as other than you. This would be other people, God, money, the environment, the world, the healthcare system, your physical disease, etc. So the way you cultivate greater presence is you reduce the amount of time you spend focused on stories about the past or the future, about yourself or anyone or anything else. He goes on to say, we human beings are thinking animals. And while thinking is an essential way of knowing, identification with our thoughts causes our thinking to become defective and inferior. This is what David Bohm is referring to when he calls us to pay attention to sustained incoherence. And this is in part of Dr. Michael Rice's current reality management worksheet. And it is defined in the footnote in the glossary of the worksheet as denial of responsibility for distasteful results while keeping up the thinking that creates those results. There is a flaw in our thinking process, and part of it is the judgment, the separation, and part of it is identification with the thoughts. We are not our thoughts. So once we believe our own thoughts and continue to unquestioningly assume that they are true, we're no longer thinking clearly. Actually, we're no longer thinking at all. And this is where Richard Moss goes right into exactly what Dr. Rice talks about. It's just the law of resonance. Somebody says, don't think about the color of your front door. Don't think about the color of your car. Don't think about your, you know, biggest success. Don't think about your favorite piece of clothing. And we set up a vibration which resonates that material that's in the mind of whoever hears that. And if they have the corresponding material in them resonating, it comes into their awareness. There's no thinking involved. It's resonance. It's vibration. And Richard Moore says, actually, we're no longer thinking at all. We are simply repeating an already programmed mental construct. And we're repeating it because it's been resonated, because it's been stirred into conscious awareness or activity. Richard says, we're like the software in a computer. Software doesn't think. It simply organizes data according to how it has been programmed. There's an essential piece here, and that is that there is one thing you can never think about. That's the present moment. That's now. That is, you can't get outside of the present to make it an object of your thought. And this creates a dilemma. The only time that actually exists is the present moment. Life is only lived in this moment, capital N-O-W. And yet nothing at all can be said about the present moment. So all of our thoughts, all of our words, all of our belief systems are about the past or the future or somebody else or our sense of ourself. You can't actually think about what is real in this moment. There is that thing we talked about just a little bit ago where as I step into a new moment, there's a gap, there's an instant, there's a microsecond before I throw thought and word on it where I have an experience. And when I practice being present in present moment awareness, I expand that brief moment in time. I slow things down because I'm in the experience without stepping back from it, labeling it, abstracting my thought, identifying with it, etc. Krishnamurti talks about this over and over again when he says, the thought is not the thing. The word is not the thing. When I say the word tree, that's a mental construct. That's a few letters strung together. And when I say that to a human being who uses that language, who's had experiences of seeing trees or climbing trees or cutting down trees or shaking the fruit out of trees, all of the memories, all of the thought structure that they have around that word comes into their awareness. And if I say, look at that tree, there's a moment where their eyes fall on the tree where they're having an experience that isn't colored by all of those words and memories. And then, in a heartbeat or an instant, the memories flood in. And they start projecting it onto their mind's image of this living, growing, ever-changing energy system that they're calling a tree. So every time we think about something, we create an abstract relationship to life. We create a mental representation of it. We are creating a perceptual construct which is not the same as the thing. And thinking interprets and describes everything outside of us, our body, our feelings. It doesn't let us know or experience any of them. Only awareness does that. And thinking is so vulnerable to distortion because it is not the actual life moment. It's not the actual thing. And when people are unconscious of the way that their ego tries to make them special, then they unconsciously project their own specialness either onto their career or their nation or their religion or their ideology. And that's how, when powerful people do that, we end up in wars and genocides and, you know, ecological disasters, etc. So, in the mandala of being, he introduced a process that you can use to observe and experience firsthand the effects, endless thoughts and stories that you tell yourself, that every one of us tells ourselves. And it's a simple way to begin to understand egoic thinking and how it profoundly affects every aspect of our life experience, including our health. He says there's a free e-course at his website about working with the mandala. So feel free to go check out Richard Moss and his website and the free e-course on working with the mandala. Mandala is a Sanskrit word meaning circle. And it has been a universal symbol over thousands of years, particularly in the Eastern spiritual traditions. In those traditions, mandalas are a form of sacred art, elaborate paintings that symbolically depict the journey from the world of illusion, which is created by the ego, to the realization of the timeless self, the center of us all. So the mandala of being is just a simple way of modeling how your thinking mind operates. And he wants it to be for us a practical tool for the practice of moving more into present moment awareness. So he has a diagram and it's a circle. And in the center of the circle is a smaller circle with the word now in all caps. And then there's an arrow pointing from that center circle straight up and one straight down and one straight to the left and one straight to the right. And then just outside the larger circle, which is just beyond the points of the arrows, at the top of the circle above the top arrow is the word future. And at the bottom, below the bottom arrow and outside the circle, is the word past. And to the right, just outside the larger circle and just outside the arrow, is the word you, or object. And to the left, just outside the larger circle or the arrow, is the word me, or subject. And he says, if you think about this diagram, how many nows, capital N-O-W-S, do you see? He says, hint, this is a trick question. If you answered one, look again. The mandala of being illustrates that there is only the now. But in a psychological sense, there are five different states of now. There's the awareness of now in the moment, first and foremost, and that's represented by the central circle. That is when you are in that moment of being aware of everything and yourself. You're fully embodied in the present moment. It can be likened to a state of meditation or flow state. Your body's awake and ready, profoundly relaxed. Your mind is simultaneously focused and yet open and spacious. You are present with and not at all in conflict with whatever arises. This state is what is meant by the expression being in the now. Relative to that state, there are four other states of nowness. So in this present moment, I am either in that being in the now, awake, aware state, without thoughts distracting me or labeling, or I'm in the past position. This represents when my thoughts and my thinking mind carries me into the past, and I identify with my thoughts about specific memories. They can be positive or negative. Then there is the future position, which is I'm in the now, but I'm not aware of it because I'm projecting my thoughts into what might happen, future stories that will generate either positive anticipation or negative anticipation. The third position that I can take mentally or emotionally when I'm in the now moment is the me position. It represents the emotional quality I experience in the present moment when I identify with my judgments about myself. Again, those judgments are usually either positive or negative. They're either grandiose or depressive. And the fourth position is the you position, where I'm in the present moment, but I'm not aware of it because I've identified with my beliefs and judgments about other people and things. And in these stories, either elevate me above other people or elevate other people above me. They have me focused on other things and thinking those things are something I need or those things are something I don't want, but I'm not awake and aware to everything because I've begun to identify with a pattern of thought that distracts me from that completely gentle, open, relaxed, focused, and open and aware, not focused on a pinpoint, but focused in the wide awake space that most of us have when we're driving a car and doing it right. He goes on to say, what the mandala shows is that your emotional reality is not caused by anything outside of you. Rather, your emotional reality is caused by your own thoughts, by the stories you tell yourself about yourself and others, the past and the future. These are the four ways that we build a mental reality that is not actually real. And these are the ways in which you can create immense emotional suffering and lose conscious connection to your true self. So he is promoting beginning to work with this awareness that in each new present moment, I'm either awake and aware and just without thought and experiencing, or I'm in the future position of thought or the past position of thought or the other position of thought or the self position of thought. And I've identified with either positive or negative thought patterns about any one of those four things. And when I do that, I am not awake and aware in the moment. I am not in the present moment awareness. And when you start to do this work and call your attention to this, you'll begin to have an opportunity to actually feel the consequences of your thoughts and the stories that you tell yourself about yourself and others, the past and the future. And you'll also begin to see that it truly is your stories about your situation that disturb you more than the actual situation. Time and time again, this awareness is liberating. Oh my gosh, I'm driving myself to distraction, worrying about something that hasn't even begun. Worrying about something that may or may not happen. I was just talking to a person this morning, and he's actually planning a trip. He's got some restrictions, so he needs to use a walker, and he's planning a trip to go to the Bears game in Las Vegas, and he probably spent 10 minutes listing all of the ways this could be a disaster, all of the ways this may not go right. We do that to ourselves day in and day out without realizing it. We identify with the potentially negative outcomes and generate fear about them. Just as much as we take a breath, it is so deeply conditioned into our cultural process and our family norms. So we can begin to identify the examples. He gives examples of emotions that are associated with these four positions. For the me position, the grandiose emotions are being superior, powerful, arrogant, aloof, and haughty. For the me position, the depressive emotions are inferior, sad, inadequate, unwanted, and unlovable. When I'm in the you focus of my thoughts, I've identified with thoughts about you and or someone or something else, those elevating judgments are looking like the emotions of appreciation and adoration, and the diminishing judgments look like rage, resentment, jealousy, hurt, and hate. When I'm focused on the past, the positive reminiscence leads me to feel proud, happy, and nostalgic, and the negative reminiscence leads me to feel guilty, blame, and regretful. When I'm focused on the future, the emotions for positive expectancy are hopeful, eager, and ebullient, and for the negative expectancy, it's worried, anxious, and terrified. Creating the ability to observe, what emotional state am I in? And practice figuring out which pattern of emotion I'm in, or which position, past or future, other or self. I can restore myself to at least an assemblance of that present moment awareness. And when I do, it turns the volume down on the production of those emotions. So somebody typed in the chat room, can you give us a reference to where to find this description? So if you go to Richard Moss, all one word, MOSS.com, and then you click on the link for resources, and then the fourth one down says Mandala of Being. And when you go there, there are free videos, and there are too many to count. But they begin with a video on the Mandala of Being, and I would imagine that's everything you would need to know and the resources for the answer to your question. So it's Richard Moss, com, and then resources, and then mandala being. So more free videos there than you'd probably want to watch, and the one that has the mandala of being is only 3.5 minutes long, and his reference there to the book that he wrote titled The Mandala of Being, and the one I'm reading from is Inside Out Healing, Transforming Your Life. So he's only briefly touching on the mandala of being in this book, but he goes into it much more in depth in the book of the same name that was written before this one. There's also an interview there with him, Inner Zenshin Radio, Z-E-N-S-I-O-N Radio. So he's got an interview there where you can listen to him talk about the mandala of being. So, thanks for the question. Inside Out Healing is the name of the book that I'm currently reading. And so go to richardmoss.com and find all the resources you could want. And we have about 20 minutes left to talk. What's your comment? What's your question? What's your answer? What's your testimonial? (563) 999-3581. Call that number and press 1 and we can have a conversation. How is this sitting with you? Does it make sense? Is my description of the diagram useful, or are you thinking you need to go to richardmoss.com to see his video with a diagram in it? 760, you're in the air.
Hey, this is Ann in Florida. That was awesome. I had my eyes closed because I had just kind of woke up and turned the radio show on. And that way I could keep all the distractions out by listening to you with my eyes closed. And that was a perfect description of what you're calling the mandala. So it's like, even though I wrote down the website and stuff, it's like, no, it's like imprinted, like right there, because everything you said about it as you went to each arrow, I could relate to. And when you were talking about, before the diagram, you were talking about a tree, and of course that triggered my experience of the tree, of hugging the tree. So I'm trying to stay in the now, in the moment, which in the moment was listening to your voice, right? So as soon as you said tree, I went to the time that I hugged the tree, because I was triggered by, you said the tree is alive, and I had read somewhere about that. So for a portion of my time in the past, so I could see, once you did the talked about the diagram, okay, this is what happened when I heard the word tree. I went to the past, thought about the past, and then I also thought about the future from that same word tree, that, oh, I could go do that again, because it was, you know, hugging something alive. So that was amazing. I just was able to do what you were talking about, and I agree with it, and it's really simple.
Well, and the more you do that, the more you do that and you practice that, you know, there isn't anything here that's being said that says it's bad to have thoughts about the past or the future or somebody else or yourself. They're simply calling you to recognize what you create in your own experience when you have those thoughts and then identify with them, as opposed to just being in the moment and observing them. Oh, look, I went to the past. Oh, look, I'm having a bunch of fearful thoughts about the future. And just notice how when you're in the observer position watching those things, how much different an impact it has on you than when you're in that moment, you have those thoughts and you identify with them. And you think, oh, my gosh, this is going to happen and that is going to happen. And you make it real because you believe or identify with the thought. And that's all they're calling us to here, right? He's calling us to start observing and practicing that present moment awareness, which is almost exactly what Michael Singer calls us to in his, you know, learning to live from a place of surrender work.
Right. But also I can see the benefit of it because I have been in the past. And I can identify a point even more recently of reacting. So when you were talking about that, it makes so much sense to, well, that instant or microsecond, like you said, where you're not in the now, react to something like blurting out something that isn't necessary or in conversation with somebody, thinking of my daughter at the moment. And it's like by practicing that, then it sounds like you slow the process of, say, reacting. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit, but I think you ask, when you practice it, do you slow the process of reacting? Yes, I think the idea, in my own personal experiences, has been that observation is key. Can I practice being in a state of observation and questioning without demanding an answer? Rilke would call us to this, right? The idea is that in the moment when your mind can ask a really good question, that same mind cannot comprehend the answer. So if the answer were given fully and completely the minute you asked every good question, it would sound like gibberish. It would sound like noise from another dimension or something spoken in a different language, because your mind needs to stretch and acquire experience to be able to comprehend what it hasn't ever experienced before. And all of our thoughts, all of the answers we have for things that come in the form of thoughts and words, they are based on our past. One of the things that Guy Finley says, and several people that are in the support group say, that's one of my favorite lines from him. He says, the new cannot be known. I can't know what is new. I can only experience it. And then after I have experienced it, it's no longer new, and it's the past, and I've got all kinds of thoughts and labels for it and judgments about it. But that's what Richard Moss is pointing to here, the idea of finding a way to be focused in spacious awareness, not micro-focused on something that I've labeled and have memories for and have a paragraph of understanding about, but focused the way I am when I'm truly being a good driver. And there's a passenger in the car and we're holding a conversation. My awareness is of everything that's going on inside and outside the car and the conversation. I'm not zoned in, focused on one thing to the exclusion of something else. And that's what he's trying to help us build a skill set for doing. The now position at the center of the mandala, he calls it present moment awareness. And in that, you're resting in your natural state of being where no thought is creating an emotion in you. Your senses are alert, you're seeing and hearing whatever is happening, and you are feeling whatever is moving through you. You are aware of whatever images or thoughts are flowing through your mind, and you are not identifying with them or pushing them away, to add what Michael Singer would say. I'm not resisting any of those thoughts. Oh, look, I'm driving my car. Oh, look, there's a thought about getting into an accident right there if this person pulls out in front of me. I just notice it. I don't generate fear about it. I don't tense up as though it might happen. I just notice the thought.
You just become aware of it.
Exactly. That's that present moment awareness, which has with it, which brings with it a state of mind which is both focused and open spaciousness. Dale Allen Hoffman uses this term a lot, openness, being open, being wide open, being in the space of openness, allowing, observing, experiencing without the thought label, without the judgment and critical analysis, without the past being overlaid into this moment, just breathing and being open and aware. Your essential orientation becomes the question, what is actually happening right now? And it's not a question that you answer with thought. It's simply a shift of awareness into a quality of alert receptivity. In that quality of being alert and receptive and open, your thoughts recede and your experience of things is just the energy of experience.
Yes. I agree, because when I started listening to you, which was only probably 10 after, my eyes were closed and I was just resting in the bed, and my stomach, what I call a stomach, was just had like a gurgle or a noise, and it's like, oh, and you had just said something about the thought. Well, I didn't have to think about that. It just was. I experienced it. And it's like, until it happened, then I thought, oh, that must be coming from my stomach, right? So that would have been the thought. But when it actually happened, it was just there. It just, I felt it.
Yeah, and there's an experience of it that happens before we judge it and have thoughts about it and label it as good or bad, right or wrong. And this kind of developing that spacious awareness is a thing that when we practice it, it will make that space between our experience, our initial moment of experience of something, and our thoughts and judgment arising, it will make that space just a little bit bigger. Mm-hmm. And if we start to work with that, if we start to work with it, we can create a buffer between our experience of life and our reactivity to it.
Right, which is so beneficial.
Well, and it's what Michael Rice would say is what is needed to be able to engage in these spiritual faculty of choice, right? I need to be able to be in touch with a wide variety of options so I'm not just reacting the way I have in the past because some thought, word, or action in me has gotten resonated.
So it would be the difference between if someone else had felt that little gurgling in their stomach, their thought might have arisen as, oh, my God, it's a pain. Oh, no, what's happening? I have an ulcer, right? Whereas someone else I didn't think that at all, right? Because I didn't have that past, I guess, thought, because I was listening to you.
You're right on to something, because I routinely work with people who every time they get a tightness or a tension or any kind of discomfort, they think, oh, my God, I've got cancer. Oh, my God, I've heard about Guillain-Barré syndrome. Oh, my God, I've got, rheumatoid arthritis. I've got lupus. I think this is probably fibromyalgia. And they think that multiple times a day. In response to the actual experience of their body energy system going through the flow of the day. And for the luckier ones, they mm-hmm. understand that's just a thought pattern, all right? And right. They can work with the tools to dismantle it and soften it. And for those who aren't so lucky, it's torturous because it sends them off to Google every symptom that's ever been mm-hmm. described and then think about, what, when can I get over to the Mayo Clinic? And that's
okay,
just an exaggerated version of what we all do all day, every day. Right? So a less exaggerated mm-hmm. version is the phone rings and I see the number on it and I go, oh, no, it's Larry. Oh, God,
right.
I don't wonder what he's going to demand. And I start projecting all of these negative thoughts. And I'm not in the moment anymore. I'm living in the future, and I'm bouncing between, oh, Larry's going to want this and that, and memories of the past and judgments on the. I'm not just present moment awareness of how well my body is functioning, and my breath is moving, and my heart is beating, and my food is digesting, and cells are reproducing, and
so whereas I wouldn't go with the physical, you just gave that example, which gives me a great example of, okay, if I hear, because I have the text message with different stuff, I hear them.
Okay, all right, you're breaking up, and
okay.
Did you hear me
better?
Say you're breaking up? I heard that you would not you would not do what is the physical.
I would go off to the side with the you. So, like, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I would go, because I have a certain tone set for my text messages. So if I hear that tone, the negative thought might generate, because I don't have that space yet, might generate the reaction, oh, no, it's my daughter texting, I need to dog sit again. Versus, oh, well, let me see who that is, right, would be more positive. Oh, it might be so-and-so.
Yep.
Oh, I'd like to hear from them. Okay. But the more this, I would practice this space between the reacting to or coming out of the moment that I was in, then I'm not going to react to that at all. Is that?
Well, it's more that I won't be identified with, cling to it, and argue for the negative reactions, right? The thoughts come and go. And the idea is, right, if I have that momentary thought, oh, my gosh, it's Larry, and I have such a hard time with Larry, then I just take a breath and I notice, oh, look, I'm into that, the you dimension of the mandala of being. I'm projecting,
right,
or I went into my past file about Larry and all of the negatives, and now I just say, oh, look at that. I'm making up stories about Larry from my past, and it doesn't have the impact on me because I'm not identifying with it. I simply see, oh, look, thought has arisen, and I observe it like I would observe my breath or the tree or my heartbeat.
Yeah.
And then it has a very different impact on me.
Which then, of course, has a much better impact on my physiological body right there. It just lessens the stress that might have come up.
Right, and the physiological body is just part of your energy system. It's not separate from your mind or your emotions or your thoughts. They're not separate.
Mm.
Right? People have been asking me lately, they're getting ready for this Integrative Mental Health Summit on the 8th, 9th, and 10th, and they've asked me, okay, so you're going to be a presenter here, and answer this question for us. What is one thing that you would change in the training for a therapist or a psychologist? And my answer is this, just what I just said to you. There is no separation in the energy that we call the mind, the emotions, the thoughts, the physical body. It's just an energy system. And all of these my will, my attention, my awareness, my focus, my identification, all these different words we use, have to do with either constricting that energy and locking it down or keeping it open and just be in the open acceptance, allowing space. But the energy is still there, right? There was some preparation I was doing for today's show, and I was going to talk about, you know, the idea of God from the other book, the book by Alan Cohen. And he's talking about creating a myth that helps people move a little bit toward understanding this flow of life energy that we call God or light or love or whatever. And it's just a myth. It's not the actual thing. The word is not the thing. But notice how we judge God is good and God is this and God is bad and God is vengeful and God is loving. That's all of our judgment. And we're projecting onto it. Take the story of the farmer who sows the seed, and some of the seed falls on the rock and some of it falls on the deep, rich soil and some of it falls among the weeds. And remember that story?
Yes.
And when you hear that, what do you think of? That the seed that falls in the deep, rich soil is good, and the seed that falls in the rocks or in among the weeds or on the stone is not such a good result, right? But the essence of our existence and our life is that seed is just seed. It's just energy, like everything else is energy. And if it falls in with the weeds, it becomes food for the weeds. If it falls in the rocky stuff, it gets to be food for the birds or the ants, or its energy gets transmuted into something. That is no less valuable in the big picture of life energy than the seed that becomes the full-fledged plant with fruit or vegetables as a produce. It's just energy. And to be able to observe that is what we're talking about here in the now presence moment. To be able to observe, oh, look, I'm judging it as bad or wrong that this seed, which is just the energy of creation expressing in a form, is going to go through this level of transformation because it's going to be eaten by some ants or some birds and then transformed into energy. And then it's all just energy. But I'm going to judge that as bad because it didn't fall in this fertile soil and blossom into this. That's a judgment on me. And I'm called in this work to just notice what the tension, the constriction, the frustration, the pain, the negative emotion that I generate when I label something as bad or wrong. So thank you for the call and the comments. It's nice to have somebody to bat things back and forth with a little bit here. I'm going to mute you so we can get to our second hour. Thank you, Anne. And I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Quick question before you go. Is it Zenson Radio, or I didn't catch that part?
No, that's if they go to richardmoss.com and then resources and then Mandala of Being, they'll see that.
Okay.
Inner Zen, S-I-O-N, radio is one of the options for things they can click on the link to hear his interview with somebody else. But the big thing is richardmoss.com/resources.
Okay.
And then you can look for the Mandala of Being, which is what we're talking about. All right. I've got quite a
few notes for today. That was awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So welcome, everybody. Yay. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, September the 29th, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael. And Michael is outside digging in the garden, but let's see, do you have your unmute on? Hello, Michael. Well, until he gets dialed in there, he's on the switchboard. He just doesn't have his mic on, I guess, to talk to us yet. So I'll just say that's a lot of good information. Enjoyed listening to that, and I will have notes to that in the notes for today so that you can go back and pick that up. I enjoyed that, and thank you, Anne, for the example of your stomach gurgling, and that there's no thought behind that. It's just an experience. I thought that was a really good example. So I'm going to turn your mic back on, Anne, so you can talk to me. Michael just texted and asked if I'd talk for just a few minutes. So I thought that was a very good example. Yeah.
Well, I mean, couldn't help it, right? I'm listening
right.
to
it
him.
Right, it just happens. It's just an experience.
Right.
But it was the perfect example of just being in the experience and not having a thought about it. And then once you did get a thought about it, then you could switch back to just being in the experience. So
yeah,
I appreciate that. Yeah. Simple example,
well,
but it's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, then, so then if I relate it to interaction with daughter, say, then it would be the same thing. Just as you said, just as I hear you say it back, right, then it's easier to pick up on as well, is that, okay, well, then I'm aware that a word was said, but if I stay in the now, okay, it was just a word. As he said, the tree is just three, you know, letters put together. Then after practicing enough, you know, awareness, the now, then I wouldn't have to react to what the word that she said was. I would just be aware of it and not have to go anywhere, I guess.
Exactly.
Anyway. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which leaves a lot better. I mean, then there is, you don't have the stress of the reaction, as you know. And I think it reminds me of the wake-up sheet, because I think when we're doing the wake-up sheet, then it's kind of the body starting to calm down, because we find out, oh, well, here's the story, and then, you know, we're writing that down, and then, oh, here's the goal, and now we're canceling all that. And right there, just by canceling that, even though it doesn't make sense a lot of the time, we're canceling it. That's a lot of stress right there that we've just
right,
relieved.
And bringing you back to the now.
Right, bringing us back to the now, and then ending in the presence of love, so who we are. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyway, that was just beneficial,
yeah.
But I noticed for me, because of all my daughter's furniture and stuff, because they still don't have a house to move into yet, is here, and if I open up my eyes, then I'm immediately focused on, you know, all the stuff. But
right.
if I keep my eyes closed and just listen, then I'm more in the now, and there is no judgment. There's just a voice that I'm hearing. That's,
That was a good, that's a good way of practicing that, is to, because, you know, when we do the breath work, we tell people to close their eyes, you know, because that
mm-hmm.
is such distraction. Just, you know, everything that you see and all of the things that are resonated and, you know, the light energy coming in. And so that's one of the reasons we tell people to close their eyes when we're doing the breath work, is to shut that out and
yeah.
be with the experience. Yeah.
And I'm becoming more aware of that whole light thing. I think I heard Michael talk about, you know, the whole, that it's, well, we're not seeing out.
Right.
It's what we're generating from inside. And so, but the light reflecting and everything, because I know I've had to use, I have some tinted lenses, and so although I don't have to use glasses for, like, to focus, I need those tinted lenses
right.
more, just even doing text messages on my phone or if I'm on the computer, because of the light reflection. So
right.
it's not that I which is still working on that.
The eyes are just an antenna, and, you know, the light frequency comes into the eye, and then if we've got our eyes open and that light frequency comes in, then we start putting meaning to everything that comes in, you know, and that's always from the past. So closing the eyes and just being with the listening, and, you know, that also is just your ears are also a receptor that just receives the information, and that in itself, you know, you can turn into, instead of just listening, you can start, you know, putting meaning to it. And so, yeah, it definitely would take practice to be able to just be in the moment and shut out all judgment and all, you know, trying to give a meaning to everything that we hear and see. So thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Right. Yeah, I'm glad I turned it on in time today. That's great.
Yeah, excellent.
Anyway.
Well, do you have anything
else?
Yeah.
No, I had a note, but I think it was something that Dr. Tim said yesterday when I'm walking around looking for my note, so I don't have it right now. If I come across it, I'll, because it was something that he said, and I said, well, there's two words, and I wanted to ask him about it, but then he was talking about that other thing today, so that was just as beneficial.
I'll tell you what.
I think I hear Michael.
And while you're looking for that note, I've got a couple of thoughts I'd like to throw into the conversation.
Certainly.
At one point, when the idea of canceling the goal was expressed, your words were, that doesn't make any sense. And what I'd like to do is recognize that it makes total 100% sense when you know what's going on. But we're not going to tend to do things that don't make sense to us. So I'd like to make sense of it. I'd like to just add some thoughts in here. And certainly closing your eyes, you know, there's a gentleman that I used to work with who was he's passed now, but he was an ophthalmologist. And he did some awesome work by stimulating through the eye, the brain, with different frequencies of light. And according to his numbers, and I don't know where he got them, I've never followed up to try and verify them, but he said that the number of connections in a single human brain is greater than the number of known molecules in the universe. In other words, if you took all the stars and all the planets and all the grains of sand on the beach and all the, that there are more connections possible in one human brain than in the known molecules in the universe. And his take was, his offering to people was, that 80% of that is visual. So when you keep your eyes open, bringing light in, you're resonating a huge amount of content. And if you go back, you might want to listen to, if you weren't on the show yesterday, you might want to give a listen to yesterday's show where I talked about anything that we're aware of and have a goal about is going to cause whatever energetic patterns are within our structure from all of our generations. So, you know, if a big trauma happened over a house being packed up with luggage and canceled the thought there was a fire and, you know, somebody died in the fire 20 generations ago, and you're looking at luggage, you're aware of luggage, and you have a goal, boy, I wish this would be cleared, then that would resonate all the way back into the genes and bring that into play in this perceptual construct, which is why people end up in crazy pain, trauma, because it plays out all of that data. The reason it makes sense to cancel the goal is because when you become aware of a goal that's driving perception based in pain, you remove the resonating frequency that brings that pain into awareness. At the same time, you collapse the surface mind's perception based in that pain, the crazy whatever's going on. And when that happens, that perception collapses in on its own footprint. You've heard me use the example. I think we need to visualize it. To me, it's so important to realize that collapsing perception is the key to healing. So I use an example. I actually did a presentation for another group a few days ago, and somebody objected to me using this because it was related to pain. But it gives people the opportunity to recognize to have a visual that keeps them, even if they forget about canceling and they're stuck in their muddle, it's like, oh, yeah, I need to collapse into the root of this to clean it up. So, you know, if we think back to 9/11, we all watched these towers free fall speed collapse into their own footprint. Pain perception, when the driver that resonates it into activity is canceled, collapses into its own footprint. Now you can directly access that data and bring it forward in the presence of love, and whatever isn't true about it dissolves, transmutes. You're freed of it. It makes sense to cancel goals all the time. Whenever there's pain, it makes perfect total sense when you understand. Now, it took me 35 years of working directly with the Aramaic forgiveness process to understand why this man said, cancel the goal. But now that I understand it and my understanding has advanced immeasurably in the last few years. In fact, just a couple of nights ago, I had a major, major healing process myself and got another level of insight into that. And that literally we're stepping into the place where we can process the generational pain based in the perception that seems to be painful to us, and we don't know why it's painful. Why are you hurting? Well, I don't know. I'm just hurting. Well, you know, maybe it was somebody 20 generations ago that was pulled into activity by that goal, because goals determine, remember that Harvard research that we talked about that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of data that goes into your perceptual construct is 9 bits. And whatever goes into that 9 bits comes out of the unconscious. And if I'm formulating, let's say in this case, a disturbed picture about luggage sitting in the room, then I'm in indirect relationship with my disturbance, my pain, my upset. Luggage is causing me pain. And in indirect relationship with that, I can't do anything about it because the root that needs to be touched and healed is underneath it. When I cancel the goal, although it may not be pleasant to have the memory of that terrible event that happened in the past, when I cancel the goal, I can come back into direct relationship with it. And by doing that in the presence of love, the root of my pain disappears. So I just wanted to make it clear why you want to cancel the goal, because it is my take, 50 years of doing it, this is the most important piece of information that anybody in the world will ever get if they want to heal themselves. And I understand, you know, why the Greeks turned forgiveness into, well, I'm going to let you off the hook for my pain, for what's happening inside of me. I understand fully why the Greeks did that. They didn't have a clue why you'd cancel the goal. They didn't have a clue how perception worked. And most of the world still doesn't. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And it's interesting because that was the exact image I had was of the 9/11 collapsing in itself. Before that, your diagrams on the whiteboard, you know, from being in person or even in, you know, in our online one, was making the V, like, you know, the simple circle of our body or what, and then the V, and then that, you know, the love is down there, and so it's collapsing in on itself, and it goes down deeper into, and it touches that love, and so then we can heal out of that, too, so I thought of that. But good catch, because clearly, if there's something else going on in my thought process, I was quick to think of that rather than, you know, the benefits of what happens when you cancel the goal.
Yeah. And my offering would be, you know, one of the things we talk about in Laws of Living is behavior. And behavior is the movement of a muscle. And the prime mover of muscles is thoughts. And so when my stomach gurgles, I say, something moved that muscle. There was something going on that caused that muscle to move. And I may not be aware of the thought, but there's one there.
So
nice to get to work, young lady.
I need to eat. Yeah,
yes.
Thanks. Well, Dr. Tim, I appreciate that. You know, that visual, it's just like imprinted because it's such a simple diagram, and just practicing more about being in the now. I'm becoming more aware of the present moment, and that's just a great example to make it easier.
Yep.
And it sounds like you were working in the garden, which is a good thing.
It is.
I just needed
I've actually got one. I've got the phone in my pocket. I've got the rake in one hand, and I've got a big pile of dirt in the other that I'm breaking up. So I'm on the garden, and I got something started that I realized I actually shouldn't have started until after the show, and I had to keep going on it. So here I am with my hands in the dirt, and here we are having a conversation about forgiveness. And, you know, it's...
I know, right? But that's great. I love it. Anyway, okay. Thank you, though, for the good catch and everything and what you do.
Appreciate
and
you.
I love how you and Dr. Tim will get into, you know, transparency moments of sharing, you know, your processing. And I think for me, I can only speak for me, that is so helpful to be reminded of, hey, it works. Yes, put the pen to the paper and you will have the next level of benefit to the world. Thank you.
Bless yeah, I had a like a major opening in my own process a couple nights ago. Jeannie was breathing me, and it was just a major amount of download that came through. I haven't organized it in a way that I can present it yet, but it's like just new information. I did some of it in yesterday's show, new level of insight into this whole game of perception. And so sometime when I get through the editing of it, I'll probably share it on the show.
Oh, good. Good. Okay, yeah, I'll listen to yesterday's, but I'm able to. Okay, perfect. All right.
Cool.
Thanks so much.
Awesome, young lady. Appreciate you.
Bless. Thanks. Okay, thanks. Blessings.
Michael, this probably isn't the same person that you were referring to, but I was doing a search so I could put it in the notes, and there's a Thomas Pulitzer who is former NORA president and neuro-optometric rehabilitation. And
right.
It's an article by him that says, vision is their dominant sense. And it says,
yep.
More than just sight is measured in terms of visual acuity. Vision is the process of deriving meaning from what is seen. It is a complex, learned, and developed set of functions that involve a multitude of skills. Research estimates that 80 to 85% of our perception, learning, and cognition and activities are mediated through vision. So I'm going to put a link to that in the notes, too.
Yeah, and then you go back and you listen to the ancient scriptures where they understood this whole process far more than we realize today. And they said, for the lack of vision, my people perish. It's why people die. We're not designed to die. And we die because we don't have vision. And we get caught up in sight. And sight is not vision. You know, we talk about vision centers. There are no vision centers in America. Well, maybe there are. But the places where you go get glasses are not vision centers. It hasn't got to do with vision. That's got to do with sight. It's a totally different thing. And I think really important to understand. So awesome.
Very cool. So we have 40 minutes, 563-999-3581, and press 1. You sound like Darth Vader, babe.
Well, I'm breathing. I'm raking out this this thing I just killed. So I'll go back on mute and let you talk.
Okay. Well, we have two hands up. So
it's all
area
yours.
Code 573. You're on the air. Who do we have?
It must be me, Mark Archer.
Hi. How are you doing?
All right. How are you?
Good.
Part of the Connecting Consciousness call that you did on Sunday.
Right.
You remember that?
Yes, sir.
Well, I was meditating or thinking about the process, you know, the denying thing. Remember
right.
that part of the conversation?
Right.
And I think with the exact opposite of that is confession. Because, you know, we have a problem, you know, with someone and we deny that it's in us. You know, well, if we acknowledge that it's within us, that's confession.
Well, it is definitely being aware.
I'm with you on
aware.
That.
Yep.
You know,
ahead,
if you go
Mike.
Back even to the 12-step programs, they said you need to tell the truth to at least one other person. When you can speak it, you can start to understand a whole other level, and that was an important part of the tradition of healing. Unfortunately, a lot of it became about churchianity rather than the tradition of healing. But yeah, I agree with you. That's an important principle. Getting
it's like
it out
acknowledging,
there.
It's like acknowledging you have the problem. You know, then you can see it, and then you can pull it out.
Exactly.
You know,
I'm with you. 100%.
You know, your thing. You know, you can't pull something out you can't see.
Yes.
And acknowledging that. Acknowledging that it's there is admitting to it that it's there. You know. So is there an Aramaic? Is there an Aramaic similarity to that? You know, just like the Aramaic similarity of what forgiveness is pulling it out. You know, is there an Aramaic word for confession that signifies that?
I'm not familiar with an Aramaic word specifically that would translate as confession, but certainly the occult.
Oops. Michael's going to have to dial back in. He just disconnected himself. So he's, I guess you were on when he was saying he was working in the garden, and so he's got his phone in his pocket. he's breathing kind of hard there. I told him he sounded like Darth Vader.
So, excuse me, I got disconnected there, sweetie. I'm back.
Yeah, go for it. Mark's still with us.
Most non-humans, those who are not functioning out of active present love, live in blockage of truth. And blockage of truth means that I'm not willing to acknowledge or speak my part in or my responsibility for what's happening here. And that a really important key, and would tie in with this idea that you're bringing forward so perfectly, the idea is that you have to honor truth, really, truly stepping into the place where you honor truth so deeply that you're willing to own it, you're willing to look at it, you're willing to deal with it, and, of course, you're willing to move through. And when the truth is painful, when the underlying dynamics brought up by truth are painful, to be willing to bring it out into the open, which would be, as you're saying, confession, and bring healing to it. So I'm with you.
Oh, good. You mentioned that you are translating, you know, Aramaic.
I'm working with a text called the Kabor's Manuscript. You can look at the whole text on our website. There are pictures of it. It's absolutely beautiful. But I, as a director of the foundation, I am not allowed to read, write, or speak the language. I have done no translation work. My part in the process, when they were translating, they had 25 of the world's top Aramaicists. And my partner, who was an attorney at that point, directed the project. And he could not read, write, or speak the language. But he would send passages out, and to 25 translators, and when they would send back their translations, if they didn't match, he'd send them out again, he'd send them out again, he'd send them out again, he'd check with experts until they got to the point where there was agreement. But when there was agreement between 25 translators, we still didn't know whether or not we had the truth. So my part in the process was to take that, which we'd learned in the translation, and take it into the classroom and see if it worked. The final verification that we were actually translating accurately was, did it work? And if it didn't work, then back to the drawing board. We need to send it back to the translators and see where the error is. And so honoring truth is a really major key in that that whole teaching, that whole understanding.
The reason I was bringing that up is because I'm presently translating the Old Testament from Hebrew into English.
Right.
And one of the reasons why I'm doing that is because there's so many different translations out there, you know, of the Bible. You know, which one is giving us the true picture of what they're actually saying in the Old Testament?
Well, my offering would be, it's going to be the one that takes the principles that are put forward and actually brings them into a place where they work. And I would suggest that if you want to get accurate, you've got to go to the Aramaic. Aramaic is a parent language to Hebrew. Hebrew is
original. I always thought that Hebrew was older than Aramaic.
No, Aramaic is the parent language to Hebrew. And the original scriptures were originally written down in Aramaic. And the Aramaic is such a language with so many idioms in it, and there's so many mistranslations, because unless you know the meaning of an idiom, you can't translate it. People try to translate the words, and it makes no sense. I use this as an example I introduce. Let's imagine that we have a man from, let's say, Russia that wants to come to one of our workshops, and I know that you are the best translator of English into Russian and Russian into English in the world. And I call you and I say, hey, you know, I just heard from this fellow in Russia, and he wants to come to the workshop, and I know you've got an extra room and your Russian is impeccable. Would you mind housing him? Would you pick him up at the airport and bring him to the workshops? And you're like, oh, man, I'd love to do that. Sure. And at the end of the week, you know, we've had dinner with this guy a couple of times. We have a really great time with him, and I don't speak any Russian, so I have difficulty communicating with him, and I say to you, as you're getting ready to take him back to the airport, would you tell him that I think he's just really cool? And you say, sure, and you turn to him in your best Russian, and you say, Michael thinks you've got a low body temperature. You translated my words perfectly, perfectly, but you didn't say a word about what I meant because I used an idiom.
Yeah.
And the Aramaic language, you know, he might be insulted, upset. Who do I think I am? His body, you know, is there something wrong with him? His body, you know, who knows what his mind might go off on? And you look at people who hear things from the scriptures, and where their idioms, they're just lost. Like one of my favorites is in the Beatitudes. We're told, in the name of a man who said, I come to connect you to the spirit of truth, that in the first Beatitude, you're supposed to be poor in spirit. It's like, I've heard preachers stretch a long way to try to make sense of that one, but in the name of someone who said, I come to connect you with the spirit of truth, why would I want to be? I'd want to be rich in spirit, wouldn't I? In Aramaic, a fly speck on a piece of paper turned the word home into poor. So what the direction was there is you have to have your home in the eternal forces from God, in what was called Ruka in Aramaic, which the Greeks mistranslated as the Holy Spirit, and there's nothing about a disembodied spirit being. It speaks of a feminine elemental force in us that undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. We need to have our home in those eternal forces instead of in our perceptual minds. But one fly speck on a piece of paper changed the meaning of that whole idea, and people are trying to be poor in spirit, but if your home is in the eternal forces from God, then you live in a different world than the perception that comes from the mind of man from carbon-based memory. It's a totally different game. And, I mean, I could go through 1,000 different examples where that kind of mistranslation has occurred because they missed the Aramaic understanding of the words.
When you're in the Old Testament, you talked about the feminine, and you know that you almost like the word chokmah, which would be wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
That's the impression, you know, because they, you know, in the Old Testament, it's pictured as a woman, you know, teaching.
Well, and in Aramaic, it is a feminine elemental force that,
right,
by definition, undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. Yeah, it's a woman who teaches. It's not a woman, but a feminine aspect that teaches,
right,
us. It comes out of the material world, but from,
right,
the higher energetic world.
But that could be, you know, from the Old Testament, that would be wisdom, you know, because that's how we get wise.
Well, yeah, it would result, it itself would not be wisdom, but it would result in wisdom. Yes, that would be,
right,
the impact,
okay, yeah,
or the effect of it would be that,
yeah,
we live,
okay,
in wisdom. Yeah.
Right.
But the thing itself, you know, if we're limited to thinking it's wisdom, then we're going to go, well, I go need to go find a wise person. Let me go find wisdom. Let me go find, as opposed to I need to find and yield myself to and invite this feminine elemental force to come into activity in me. That's going to lead to a whole different pursuit and therefore a whole different result.
Yeah.
So if you're going to translate, I'd suggest you start looking at the Aramaic and, you know, at least consider where it fits, how it fits, and what's there.
Yeah.
It's powerful.
Okay.
And.
All right, thank you.
It works.
Go ahead.
I say, and it works.
Oh, okay.
Well, I appreciate your input about the confession idea. Thank you, thank you, thank you, because that fits perfectly. And it's another aspect that really needs to be tapped into. I'm with you 100% on that.
Yeah,
thank
I just thought
that.
It was related to what you were saying in as you could say the opposite form.
Absolutely. Yep, I'm with you.
Okay.
Give good input.
Thanks,
we love
sir.
Your input. Come back often and give us input, please.
Okay, as often as I have it.
All right, sir. Blessings. Appreciate you. Lots of love.
Thank you.
All right.
Awesome. And we have another
Jeannie.
Caller.
Okay.
And this is 417. I think it's Judy. I opted out.
Well, hey there, Miss Judy.
Yes, I didn't. I
hey
thought
there,
I
Ms.
opted
Judy.
Out,
welcome.
But I. Well, thank you.
Well, you
I
know,
have
did
need...
you ever hear the story? Did you ever hear the story, Judy, of the guy who worked across a graveyard from his home, and he, you know, knew the guys who worked in the graveyard. He knew the path through, and he oftentimes worked night shift in dark nights with no moon. He just cut across the graveyard, and one day, unbeknownst to him, they dug a fresh grave. And he's going across the pathway he normally goes on, and he falls into the grave. And it's so deep that he just can't get out of it. He's trapped. He's like, well, you know, I know the guys that work here. I'll just go to sleep, and in the morning they'll get me out. Well, about 4 in the morning, a drunk comes stumbling through the graveyard and falls into the same hole. The guy kind of wakes up a little bit as this drunk is struggling to get out, and he says to the drunk, hey, Mac, now that you're in here, you can't get out. But the drunk did. But the drunk did. It's called motivation.
Oh,
motivation.
A lot of that.
Hey, yeah, you know, let's
living
laugh.
Living in the present.
What the heck? Yes. Yes.
Isn't when you're motivated, you're in the present?
you're probably at least in the presence.
At least
yes.
Into it. Oh, boy. Well, I imagine
so what was
out
on your mind
digging...
that you pushed the button?
Okay.
I haven't been sleeping at all. And
ouch.
Yeah, it's been like I've been dealing with this issue with my neighbor for months, and I've been doing my work around it. And it is getting better, but like I'm over 6 months into this same neighbor, you know, and she when I moved in, she told me that she used to observe. She was an observer in the mental institutions of the clients or patients, whatever you call them.
Right.
Just an observer, and she's also a shaman, and I have been around shaman before. And so I know a little bit about their energy fields, and I've been dealing with her energy field coming into my energy field. And when I try to go to sleep, I'll get to that point where I'm starting to get into the REM sleep, and then she makes a noise. Sometimes it's just it's something minor, and then other times it's not. And so now I'm not sleeping at all.
Ouch.
Yeah.
So my highest thought would be, you know, you can go on Amazon and for probably $29, you can buy what's called a white noise machine. And a white noise machine you plug in the wall, and it makes just a background sound that the brain doesn't have any brain cells for, so doesn't stimulate perception into activity. But it creates an interference pattern for outside noises. So you might try getting yourself a white noise machine, and then probably when she makes noises, it won't have anything to do with you. It won't bother you. You won't even hear it because the white noise is there. And your brain doesn't react with perception to white noise. So that might be a thing to do.
Wow. $29. Michael, the wind is blowing into your microphone. Turn your head or something. The wind's blowing in your microphone.
Okay. How's that? Is that better?
Much better.
Okay,
now,
good.
There is, I do have internet, and there is on the YouTube station, there are, they have like deep sleep and rain sounds, you know, that they can put out. But I'm
same,
not
same
sure
idea.
About. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. You know, there
I'll
are,
give
there
it
are,
a whirl.
Things on YouTube that will play relaxing, you know, quietening music for 8 hours at a time. So when you're ready to go to sleep, pop on YouTube and get some sleep.
Okay, I will definitely try that. I've been doing my worksheets around it, and it's the only thing that saved me so far, you know.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you're ready for the next level, so here you go with the next level.
I am.
Hey, cool.
Thank you for you and Jeannie being here.
We appreciate the opportunity to be here, I'll tell you. Big
well,
time.
You just have a good time digging that garden, honey.
It's in the plan.
I know you and Jeannie will really enjoy it.
We are, hands in the worms and all.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, blessings. Bye-bye. So, Miss Jeannie, where's our time at?
We have 20 minutes.
Cool. Well, if you're out there in listener land and you're on one of those stations where we can't see you on our control panel, call in numbers 563-999-3581. Pick up the phone. Give us a call. How can we support you? What's on your mind? What are you thinking about? What can we do to assist and support you with these tools? If you push 1, Jeannie will introduce you by your area code, and we'll be having a conversation, and we would love to have a conversation with you. That's our purpose for being here. It's our raison d'être. In the meantime, I just cut out a square of 20 by 20 buckwheat that we planted about 2 weeks ago. It was up to about 8 inches tall. So I just plowed it into the ground on top of 4,000 pounds of compost that Jeannie and I went out and got in a trailer a couple of weeks ago. And so now we've cut all that down. I'm digging it back into the soil. And then I'm going to plant another round of buckwheat to get a second crop before winter strikes. And then just before we get to the, you know, a bunch of hard freezes, we'll put in some what they call hairy vetch, which overwinters. The buckwheat dies in the freezing weather. So we'll put some hairy vetch in our garden. This new one, this is a totally new garden. We'll be ready to grow all kinds of awesome food for next year. And if you're not growing food, you know, there's this magical thing. You put a little hole in the ground, you drop a seed in it, and the earth gives you wealth and nutrition and sustenance that you can hardly buy in the culture. And there's actually a really excellent film you can go to. You can do a search for it. And it costs $1 on Vimeo to watch. The best buck you'll ever spend if you have any interest in what's happening to the planet. And one of the things that is coming out more and more is that with the destruction of our soils, with the chemical use of things like pouring 10 gallons of glyphosate on an acre of land in order to plant and grow chemically, that we're down to the point where if we keep going the way we're going in 60 years, all of the soil on the planet, that is, that's in harvest, in crops, will be dead. And when the soil dies, we die. That's just the way it is. So restoring the soil. So there's one called Kiss the Earth. Excellent video. Costs $1 on Amazon. Woody Harrelson, if you like Woody Harrelson, he narrates it. And it's really excellent information about what the average person can do in their own communities. You know, it doesn't take a government to fix what's going on. It takes people taking action. Same as with forgiveness. And so stepping into the healing process of the earth, I think, is something really important that each of us can participate in and heal some soil. Get your community working on community gardens and healing soil. Feed your community. Feed the homeless out of community gardens. Yeah, you have to put some time, intelligence, money, and energy into it, but is what you're putting your time, intelligence, money, and energy into really satisfying you at this point? I just ask that question. I can remember when I had three businesses. I had 60 employees. I had a Mark III on one side of my driveway. I had an Eldorado on the other. I had a penthouse apartment in one city. I had homes in two other cities. And I had so much stuff. Oh, man, I had stuff. Was I happy? No. Was it what I was here for? No. And I woke up one morning. It's like, Michael, what the hell are you doing? And I walked away. And those who know me, you know that you've been on the road with me. You know, for 40 years we traveled and did our workshops free and we paid our own expenses. It's a little different than, you know, the Eldorado and the penthouse and the Mark III. What are you doing with your life, with your world, with your money, with your power, with your energy? What are you doing? Is it really what you're here for? And if it's not, you know, maybe something just as small as starting a little garden might inspire a neighbor. Might open your neighborhood. Who knows? Who knows what happens? But we're here to support you in every way that we can, from the womb to the tomb. You know, the way birth is given is important. And we need to get conscious about how we birth and bring people into the world. The tomb, how we send people out of the world. And, you know, the person who's leaving the world needs people around them that are capable of holding to a space of active present love, not people who are whining and crying because of all the issues they've never worked through with that person and will never get to work through. You know, if you actually have a relationship based in love with a person and they pass away, what's going to move in you? Love, that's it. The rest of it's just unresolved toxic energy, and we need to be working through those toxic energies. And when we do, we'll see how we can vitalize our world, vitalize our soils, vitalize the food we put in our mouths. And the game is going to change. And, boy, the game needs to be changed. Really, really seriously. So what Michael, support can we be? Yes, sweetie?
We do have a hand up, but that the movie is actually called Kiss the Ground.
Kiss the Ground. What did I say it was?
Kiss the Earth.
Kiss the Earth. Okay. Kiss the Ground. Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
You're welcome. And we do have a hand up.
Yeah.
541, I believe it's Miss Julie Matthews in Oregon.
Hey there, Julie.
Hi.
How are you, young lady?
Can you hear me good? Well,
you're loud and clear.
Oh, great. Okay. So I want to bring up a, since you're speaking about our wonderful earth that can grow a seed, I want to mention, if anyone else is having the experience I'm having, which has been for quite a few months, and I have, there's this smell in the air, there's smell in the water, there's smell in food that I'm eating, and it all tastes kind of like celery. And actually the smell is very pronounced in celery. The whole flavor of celery has changed. It's got some layer of flavor in it. And I live on the West Coast here in Oregon, and we're agricultural out here quite a bit.
Right.
And I don't know if it's my nose, because I'm there 87 times, 42 different smells.
Every time, right?
Yeah. And I do have a fear about that I took the COVID vaccine, so am I being affected? But the thing is, it's so prevalent. And I wondered if anyone else is experiencing that, and maybe you'll hear from people. I don't know.
I'll put my ear to the ground and ask the question, but it's not anything that I've experienced or am aware of.
Oh, here's a good example, too. It's the flavor I first noticed in eggs. And then I always read labels, and I started noticing celery powder is being used as a preservative or some sort of a stabilizing agent. So I don't know what, I don't know, but I guess all I can do is keep adapting because I'm able to do that.
Well, here's what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Being creators, if there's something toxic out there, and people do a lot of terror and trauma around the toxicity, and if there's toxicity, we want to know about it, we want to do something about it. But if it's not something you can do anything about at the moment, aside from, maybe take some political action or what have you if you need to, then instruct your body to adapt and transmute it into love. Transmute it by the presence of love.
Oh, yeah.
And change the game. Yeah.
Okay.
You've always got that. Mm-hmm. You say, cell phones are toxic to the brain. Okay, well, I use a cell phone a lot. What do? Okay, body, learn to transmute this energy and move it from toxic to something useful to me. And now somebody says, that won't work. Well, maybe it won't work, but I'll tell you what. If you add terror and trauma to, this toxic energy, that will work, and it will make it 10 times worse. So that's my take.
Yes. Thank you, Michael. Just even laughing helps. Thank you.
Yeah. And maybe get yourself some good organic celery, something energetically that might assist, if it is something to do with celery, is get yourself some good organic celery and start doing celery juice and bring that into your field in a way that uses it constructively.
Oh, instead of resisting, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, because underlying that resistance thought is the "this is bad for me" thought, and then I'm looking for symptoms.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
And guess what you're going to find? You will find it.
Yep.
So if you're going to do something, transmute it, heal it. Bring it into the healing mode.
Okay. Thank you. Well, that brings me more empowerment, I think, to a bigger thing, and you'll help me with this, I'm sure. I'm seeing outside of myself my boyfriend going through pre-diabetes.
No, wait a minute. Hold on just a second. So you can actually see something outside of you with your eyes? I didn't know that was possible. I thought that was...
Okay, there's... Okay, he's having a horrible experience, so he tells me in his body.
So information's coming in that's telling you that he's got some pre-diabetic stuff going on.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I want to help, of course, and share knowledge that I have. And he really isn't ready to listen he kind of is. I think fearful.
I remember a gal at Heartland. This goes back probably 20 years ago, and she was pre-diabetic, and she was a monster. All of her friends knew if she gets acting like a bear, feed her because she's got blood sugar problems. Her pancreas isn't working properly. And, you know, I mean, she would just, she was on the support team at Heartland, and everybody was just, oh, my God, look at this. Well, this woman is just a terror when she doesn't eat. And she finally shared with the group that several years earlier she was married to a man that was the love of her life and that she had planned to be with forever. And he had been in an accident and had a transfusion, and there was AIDS in the transfusion, and he died.
Oh, yeah,
and
I've heard of that.
She was in so much grief. And when she finally, in the intensive, she finally dealt with, I mean, she just went into a major grief experience around that. The next day, she wasn't screaming and raging for food. And from then on, for the rest of the time she was at Heartland, you could feed her or not feed her. It didn't matter. So my offering would be to perhaps see if you can inspire this man, because the thing that tends to shut down, you know, the endocrine system shuts down organ by organ, and the thing that tends to shut down the pancreas is grief, unresolved grief. So you might invite him to look at and see if there's some unresolved grief. And, you know, I mean, if he won't do worksheets or anything, you know, maybe just talk to him about grief, see if he's got any grief stories to tell you, and then just see if he'll breathe. Just, well, you know, how about if you just breathe with me and see something, you know, he might be ready for it to move on in that way and get out the other side of what's probably loaded his pancreas down to the point where it's not working properly.
And is that the pancreas one of the fundamental symptoms for diabetes?
Yeah, that's where
like,
that's the that's where the congestion is when diabetes arrives. Yeah,
okay.
It's pancreas. That's,
okay,
that regulates
well,
blood
plus
sugar
he's got,
basically.
He has really sore muscles, so both shoulders, and really deep. He says I can't even massage and find it. You know. So that sounds emotional too, doesn't it? Like a grief release.
It does,
maybe.
Yes. Good chance.
Yeah, trying to control. He just, and he has a big anger burst often. He's overweight, so maybe it is blood sugar.
Well, the anger is the drug probably that he's using in order to not deal with the grief. That's, you know, if something gets too close to the grief, then the anger burst is a way to not have to deal with it.
Yeah,
so,
and there is a grief, and he lost a son.
Ooh,
suddenly,
yeah, that would be big.
Yeah. Okay, well, Michael.
Well,
thank
we'll
you.
Hold the space for him.
Yes, thank you.
And for you to be guided.
He's of Scottish descent. Thank you, Michael.
Uh-huh.
And I've been wanting to ask you about your Scottish descent. And he's not so much he doesn't really think about past lives, but his last name is Wallace, and it is in the lineage of Sir William Wallace and the Braveheart movie, which he hasn't
You might
seen
sit him down
movie.
And get him to watch Braveheart. I mean, I've watched that movie 24 times in order to clear out some of my rage to get to other layers of things. So
you might introduce
me to that.
I thought maybe he could be carrying rage from all that. And does somebody have to believe in it? Or just if something comes up in them, let it be a way to process
matter.
Out? Yeah, okay.
Belief is not a requirement.
Yeah.
Just
okay.
Use the tools and healing happens. Belief isn't required.
And would you like to share about your Scottish background? Because I'm just wondering if we were all sort of the same clan at one point somewhere in there.
Oh,
you know much about your background?
No, I don't know a whole lot about it. It's not something that's ever really interested me. And I've had other pursuits in my life than that one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So you're just releasing that. Yeah, that's good.
Yep.
Or, yeah.
Both
okay,
of my
well,
parents
I know.
Came
yeah, the
from
power...
Scotland. And...
That's pretty good.
But that's about the extent of it. Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, thank you for everything. All the coverage.
All right, young lady.
That we went through. All right. Oh, wait, did I miss something on Sunday? You had a session or something? A conversation?
It was a private session. It was private. It wasn't open. That's why we didn't publicize it. It was for a private group.
Okay, I hear you. All righty. Okay, got to stay posted. Okay, I'll be in touch another time. Thank you.
All right, take care. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Blessings. Bye.
All right, we're down to about 3.5 minutes. Maybe just announce about Saturday, October the 9th.
Yeah, we've got a Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing workshop coming up Saturday, October the 9th. And we've actually, there's a flyer on our website if you go to yagain.org. And with the new layout, sweetie, where would they go to find the flyer for?
If they just scroll down the page just a little bit, there is actually a whole section that's titled Upcoming Events and Intensives. And there's flyers for I'm going to mute you, Michael. You're really loud here. Okay. So if you go to whyagain.org and then just scroll down on the homepage, there's a section that says Upcoming Events and Intensives. And there is the first item is the self-study, the codependence to interdependence and responsibility communication. That's a 90-hour self-study. You'll get all the videos, and you get two personal code evaluations with that. And you get invitations to the food app and to the food group. And then underneath that, it's the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing monthly online membership. And there's a flyer there. You can click on that. And that begins on October the 9th. We'll be doing the breath work from 10 to 5. And then the following Wednesday from 7 to 9 in the evening, and those are Eastern time, then we'll be doing a follow-up support session for that. And we'll be doing that every month, the first Saturday of the month, and then the following Wednesday. And then there's also, any other flyers for anything that's open to people, those will be listed right there under the events as well. And that takes us up to close to the end of the hour. Any closing thoughts, Michael?
No. I'm ready to rock and roll. We'll just say we'll hold the space, and if any of these sessions are meaningful to you, they're free. They're at over 3,500 hours or so on our website. You can download free of radio shows and pass it on to somebody. Listen to it again and again, and meanings will keep opening. So delighted that you're here. And, sweetie, if you'd come out and have a look, I need to determine where we're going to put the worm bin as I move it. And so, everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. You have the power to give it, and the world needs it. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.